Podcast. I'm your sitting host, Nick Martinez. Our usual host, Will Smith. The Fresh Prince of Podcasting is still on his sabbatical, so he'll be back next week. This week, back by popular demand, we have, once again, the Hoops Inquirer Brain Trust, consisting of reporter extraordinaire Trey Rodriguez. What's up, Trey?
How's it going, Nick? How's it going?
It's going well. And angry Marcus Smart hater, national NBA writer, Andrew Doxie. How's it going, Drew?
It was good, guys. It's Andrew, your resident Marcus Smart stan. It's cool, though. He's only the best player in the NBA.
I will never understand. Drew's hatred for Marcus Smart knows no bounds and is truly grotesque.
Wait, what? Excuse me?
I'm embarrassed for you, dude. It's really weird. Like, let that man live. Guys, this week we are previewing free agency, which has kicked off to a just mind-blowing start with the first thing we got to talk about, which is the trade, probably the biggest trade in terms of volume of players being moved in got to be like at least like 8-9 years, which is the trade of Chris Paul from Los Angeles Clippers to the Houston Rockets for, you know, a murderer's row of players and money and a pick that is headlined by Sam Decker, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, and, you know, Montrezl Harrell. Drew, what do you think of this one? Is this, I mean, what are your initial reactions to this before we even get into evaluating the fit and all that?
Well, my first thought was that this is actually a really nice thing for Chris Paul to do, even though there might be some selfish motive behind it. But letting the Clippers know that he wasn't going to re-sign with them was a big deal, because this way the Clippers aren't left with what happened to the Hawks and Al Horford or the OKC Thunder and Kevin Durant last season. This way they can at least get some assets back and losing their franchise player. So, you know, even though the pieces by themselves aren't, you know, standout pieces, you know, you do get Patrick Beverley, who's first team all defense, and Lou Williams, who was a candidate for Sixth Man of the Year, and nobody can really replace Chris Paul's impact. But also they get a top three protected 2018 first round pick. So for me, you know, and the Clippers, and they don't really have a lot of future assets, it's good to at least get something, because now they're not losing Chris Paul for nothing. For Chris Paul, he's probably opting in so that he can get that you know, larger contract next offseason, as well as hitting free agency at the same time with LeBron, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, and all those guys. So they're probably going to all hit the free agency at the same time, and we might see a banana boat team. But for the Rockets, I'm not really sure why they did this, because, you know, if Chris Paul was going to sign with them anyway, I'm not sure why they would bother to engage the Clippers in trade talks. But, you know, in any case, I think the Clippers definitely won this, because if Chris Paul was definitely going to leave, at least they got something for it.
For sure. You know, the thing that kind of strikes me about this is that the Clippers kind of finally got all the bench players that they needed during the Chris Paul big 3 years. Just a little bit too late. Trey, what are your thoughts on this trade? Just your gut-level reaction when you saw the Woj notification on your phone?
Just the fact that, you know, the Clippers didn't lose out much. I mean, yeah, they lost Chris Paul, but like Drew was just stating, if he was going to leave anyways, they got a hell of a return. Sam Decker might be their best wing in the last 3 years, for being honest, their best three. And Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams are two very serviceable, you know, possibly, you know, borderline starters, definitely great role players. So, listen, they were going to lose one of the top three point guards in the league for nothing, and they got him for something. So I think I was surprised that they got so lucky, if we're being honest. You know, you never want to say that a team gets lucky when their best player walks away, but for them to lose Chris Paul for all of this is really not the end of the world, and it could have been much worse, in my opinion.
Yeah, it seems very fair is kind of what I thought when I saw it. You know, like Drew said, I think it was really considerate of Paul, who is probably the best Clipper of all time, to give the organization a heads up that he was leaving and to let them get something that might, you know, help them retool around Blake Griffin, if that ends up being what they end up doing, if Blake ends up resigning there, or helps them, you know, begin a rebuilding project if he doesn't. There's so many things we can talk about with this. And I think first I want to talk about the most fun thing, right? The flashiest thing, which is, you know, just what's this gonna look like on the court for the Rockets? You know, we're this is a Rockets team that kind of reinvented itself with head coach Mike D'Antoni last season by taking James Harden, who traditionally plays shooting guard, and putting the ball in his hands and letting him create to just, you know, incredible effect. We ran a Twitter poll about this on the Hoops Inc. main page, just asking people, you know, what do you think of the move as far as fit goes? And we got about, you know, a split between 45% of the people saying that it was a smart move and 42% saying it was questionable for the Rockets. And then 13% saying it was bad. Trey, look, what do you think it's going to look like on the court? I mean, do you think it's going to work? You know, people are saying things that, well, they're both used to having the ball in their hands. You know, how can they coexist?
Listen, it's going to work for the regular season for sure. You know, teams don't have too much time to focus and game plan on one specific team during the regular season. We see this all the time where teams just run over the competition in the regular season. I don't have any sort of doubt that it'll work then. It may take a couple of games, maybe a week or two, to get going. But the fact of the matter is that James Harden very often, you know, was either tired or just getting shut down by the fact that, you know, the offense for the Rockets last year was centered around him, of course. So the fact that now you have a second, probably maybe the second or third best playmaker in the league behind Harden and LeBron, possibly. The fact that you have a guy that caliber who can also do this, just similar things as what Harden was being asked to do regardless. The fact that now you have a second guy who can do that, it takes off some of the pressure off of Harden moving forward. So in that sense, it's fantastic. You know, and I'm sure that during the regular season, it'll absolutely work. Just, you know, I think that the second that it comes down to the playoffs, I don't know if it's a great fit. Daniel Abed wrote a great piece earlier, just about a couple hours before we started recording this podcast. And his sentiments are basically that Chris Paul doesn't necessarily fix any of the issues that the Rockets had. And I'm inclined to agree with that. I think in losing Patrick Beverley, they obviously lose their best perimeter defender. Chris Paul is nowhere near Patrick Beverley defensively, and at least not this point in his career. And even though Chris Paul, what he brings offensively is obviously so much better than what Patrick Beverley was giving you offensively, that it might balance out, you know, what you lose from Beverley and what you gain from Chris Paul. At the end of the day, it's defense overall that was their problem, in my opinion. And they're essentially building themselves up to be a team that's just going to try to have to outscore the other team, which is what they were last year, and that didn't get them very far. So it's a questionable move as it stands. If they get another offensive player, you know, if they land a Paul George, for instance, instead of a Carmelo Anthony, Paul George being a very, very solid defender who can hold his ground, then maybe the move isn't as questionable as it is right now. But as it stands, I feel like it is a little weird. It feels like it was just a push to have another superstar, which, you know, will be great, especially in the regular season. But I'm not sure come playoff time that'll make that much of a difference, you know?
I think low-key that's kind of a hot take. Drew, you're the master of hot takes.
I actually voted for questionable too, but I just want to address something real quick with what Trey said. You were saying how defensively at this point in their careers, Patrick Beverley is a better defender. But if you actually look at the numbers this season, Chris Paul posted better defensive win shares than Patrick Beverley did. Now, you could, I don't know if that's a function of playing with DeAndre Jordan and his rim protection or not, but, you know, I think it's a close enough margin, especially since both landed on first-team all-defense. But I think with the offense, Chris Paul has a different dynamic, because if you look at it, in the series with the Spurs, Houston's offense became a little more it was kind of predictable, because you had a bunch of 3-point shooting, and then you had a bunch of paint touches, but there wasn't any mid-range. So now that you have Chris Paul, who's one of the best mid-range shooters in the NBA, you have a third dynamic, even though Mike D'Antoni isn't a big fan of mid-range, but you have that option now. to be able to go to that, especially when Chris Paul creates offense. And I think another thing that people confuse with Chris Paul is that the fact that he – there's this misconception that he needs the ball. I mean, he is a ball-dominant guard, but there's a difference between being able – or playing on ball and being an entire team's offense. And Chris Paul was L.A.'s offense. You know, they all of the offense revolves around him, unless they ran a couple sets for Blake Griffin running his own pick and roll. But they didn't go to that nearly as often as they should have, in my opinion. So the fact that Chris Paul has been working on ball all this time for the last 6 years, or really his whole career, I think that we don't really know for sure if he is as ball dominant as we think he is. I think it's, you know, maybe if we look at a couple of All-Star games in the past, we'll see, you know, how he can do off the ball a little bit. But as for playing in the playoffs, I think that's an interesting question. I think I agree with Trey that the regular season shouldn't be as big of a problem as the playoffs, but it'll be interesting to see James Harden enter the playoffs, you know, a little more rested than usual because he won't have to carry the entire offense on his back. So I'm interested to see it, but I do still say it's questionable because there are risks that come with it.
Well, I think that the main thing, though, is on the defensive side. You mentioned a lot of things that I generally agree with offensively. You know, again, assuming the Rockets are okay with Chris Paul doing his thing with, you know, in the mid-range, that's fantastic. But, and again, I listen, especially with Harden, a lot of people are saying, well, if you move Harden to the two, back to the two, and you take him away from the ball and don't let him do what he was doing last year, then you're kind of not utilizing him to his best potential. I disagree with that. I think he'll be perfectly fine off the ball. All you have to really do, if we're being honest, is pair one or the other, you know, with the bench in terms of, you know, rotations and let them orchestrate in that sense. But I think that the biggest thing with defensively, I mean, if you go up against a team that has a decent point guard or shooting guard, you can't hide Harden from that player. And now you can't hide Chris Paul either, which is something that the Clippers would occasionally do. Defensively is where I have the worries. I think that, you know, any stats that support Chris Paul defensively may very well be a result, obviously, of him playing alongside DeAndre Jordan. And the Rockets don't necessarily have rim protection. I mean, you know, Clint Capella's a shot blocker. I don't know if he's a defensive anchor, you know, and in a sense, yes, that is rim protection, but you know, the difference there is usually guys who are only making an impact defensively. If you see that statistic in the box score, you know, the blocks and whatnot, and guys like that are typically getting foul trouble very easily. So it's not the same as having a really, and granted, I don't think DeAndre Jordan was necessarily a defensive anchor, but he was much more so than Clint Capella, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think there's a general misconception between rim protection and good defense. I think the biggest target of that misconception is Hassan Whiteside. People see the blocks and they see his athleticism and they think that he's a good defender. I even have people, you know, claiming that he got robbed, that he wasn't on an all-defensive team. But if you look at the numbers and you actually watch the games, Hassan Whiteside is not a good defender. That's a hot take, I'm sure. And I know people are listening for hot takes, but I don't think Hassan Whiteside is a good defender. I don't think DeAndre Jordan is as good as advertised, because rim protection doesn't equal good defense. It's a part of good defense, and you need rim protection to be a good defender, but it doesn't guarantee that you are a good defender.
Right, no, 100% with you. And in terms of Whiteside, right on the money, you know, uber athletic guy. Same thing with DeAndre Jordan, if we're being honest. But, you know, not – When I think of true defensive anchors, I obviously think of the guys like Draymond Green. We're talking centers.
Yeah.
Marc Gasol, right? Marc Gasol gets about 2 inches off the floor. He's not a crazy athletic guy.
Rudy Gobert.
Right. Rudy Gobert as well. And especially this, right? Here's to me the important part for talking defensively, and defensively specifically about your center. The ability to defend the pick and roll. And where Rudy Gobert excels is that he has the foot speed and the length to contain any guard off of a pick and roll, you know. And that's one of the, you know, those things that, again, the guys that you may want to call, you know, rim protectors or shot blockers for the Rockets, you know, they're not necessarily great defenders. So in terms of the defense behind Chris Paul and James Harden, I'd be a little worried just because them two, you know, Harden in particular has a bad rep. I don't necessarily think he's a poor defender. I just think he's extremely lazy. But, you know, that's that. And Chris Paul is what he is at this point. He's rather aging. So, you know, that's just my two cents on how the two would fit, you know, how the two might have issues defensively.
Right.
Trey, you kind of referenced earlier the idea that, you know, a player like Paul George could make a lot of the defensive issues, if not go away, could definitely minimize them. The question that I have for you and for Drew as well is, you know, okay, let's say they can't get Paul George. Say Paul George, you know, ends up in Boston, for example. Another option that's been talked about is Carmelo Anthony, who is, you know, available via something somehow, right? Trade, buyout, it's still up in the air. Carmelo obviously does not bring those defensive chops that guy Paul George does. Certainly not at three position, maybe at the four. Be a good fit with his team, Trey?
It might not be the end of the world. Look, I'll reiterate what I said the first time around, just with the Chris Paul trade. They'll be fantastic in the regular season. They'll shoot lights out. My issue is come the playoffs when there's you know, much more preparation from game to game, adjustments from game to game. The thing that, you know, that would allude to is that they would essentially try to be almost like Team USA, right? Like, they're just going to try to shoot the lights out. And it would be an upgrade, in my opinion, from the team that they had last year, of course. Because now you have, you know, another immensely talented scorer on the floor with you. And in that sense, they might have a chance to steal a couple of games from the Warriors, let's say, if they were to end up facing the Warriors in the playoffs. Just because they're gonna be talented enough. And now, again, this is assuming that the remaining pieces around them are in total garbage. Because at the end of the day, these guys are going to have to sit down for a couple of minutes during the game, of course. And not just that, you know, opposing teams can zero in on exploiting the other guys that are out there with them. So it'll be interesting to see how they fill out the remaining spots on the team, assuming that they have to give up, let's say, Trevor Ariza and or Eric Gordon in a trade for Carmelo or George or whomever it may be that they bring in. But I do think it would be an improvement from the team last year, and I do think that they'll have the offensive talent, again, to just utterly destroy a team here and there. They would be good enough to steal a couple of games from the Warriors just because they'll have the power offensively, I think, to more or less match what Golden State puts out there offensively. If we're talking Chris Paul, James Harden, and Melo, I mean, listen, Melo, when he's on his game, is still a top three, maybe top four offensive player. Melo on a hot night can't be stopped. You know, how often does he have hot nights? That's the thing, of course. But you know, they would definitely be able to steal a couple of games, and I guess that's a modest improvement, right? How many teams could realistically say they can do that? But at the end of the day, you know, the Warriors may shoot lights out and they'll, you know, light you up from three, but at the end of the day, it's defense that kills you. It's their defense that kills you. It's the fact that their defense allows them to take as many threes as it is that they take in transition, which is what, at the end of the day, is what kills you. But that starts on the defensive end. It starts with Draymond Green shutting guys down. It starts with Klay Thompson shutting guys down. Klay Thompson shutting guys down from shooting guard position all the way to the power forward position. I mean, I remember a possession in the finals where Kevin Love caught the ball on the left block, and he finished on the wing by the time that he decided to cough up the ball with Klay Thompson on him. So we're talking about, and you know, let's say, assume they keep Andre Iguodala, you know, right there, those are three guys that could do a hell of a job neutralizing any other three guys that they face out there. So it would be an upgrade and all that, but again, if the end goal and the measuring stick is going to be what can they do versus the Warriors, they're still going to fall short.
Folks, you heard it here. Trey Rodriguez thinks Carmelo Anthony is a top three offensive player in the NBA, and he thinks that a team goes around James
whoa.
Harden.
When he's hot, let's slow down. When he's hot, jab, 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 shoot. I don't know about that. And listen,
triple threat is a viable offensive option.
Listen, just to add on to that real quick, in terms of Melo, the best thing in the world that could ever happen to Melo is him playing with other ball dominant players. Because him having to play off the ball makes him I don't want to say Durant efficient, but it pushes him towards
okay,
that efficiency.
Slow down.
No, of course, you know,
slow
of course.
Down. Pump
but
the brakes.
When he listen, when he's the number one option, as he's been in New York for God knows how many, it feels like centuries now, he knows he's going to have X amount of touches in a game. And there's little urgency to make the most out of every touch. If you have a Chris Paul and a James Harden on your team, aside from the fact that they're going to give you the ball when you're open, you don't have to work for it the way that you've had to work for it, you know, for most of your career. Aside from that, he knows that he can only have so many touches. And that forces more efficiency from a player of his caliber. So it'd be fantastic for him.
I mean, that's why he excels on Team USA and All-Star teams, because he's not the focus of our defense. And it's really funny because every time we go to the Olympics and we come back, we're always hoping that the next season, you know, Carmelo Anthony starts to show some of that Olympic mellow that we all love to watch.
Carmelo is the greatest Team USA player of all time.
Easily.
he's the greatest
team.
What
does that mean? That's meaningless.
Is it
my
like, I mean, it's a fact.
That's the participation award. That's like the award for
no,
just showing up. Like if LeBron has signed
no,
up for more, you'd be the greatest.
That's like he's saying he's the all star of all stars. That's not necessarily meaningless, Nick.
But
it's not that meaningful either.
It's not, but it's not meaningless either. There's there's some wiggle room.
It is a gray area for sure. I mean, when I first heard you say it, I didn't have the reaction that Nick did. You know, I didn't think that it was that hot of a take, but I don't know. A lot of good players have played on Team USA, but at the same time, I see what you're saying, man.
He has like every single record, man. Think about that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but and it's a function of how. I mean, it's funny because if you look at all his training videos, Melo's always wearing a hoodie on his Instagram videos and stuff. I think Hoodie Melo is the one that goes to play overseas for Team USA. That's got to be it. If we let Melo wear a hoodie in the regular season in the playoffs, he'd easily be a top three player in the NBA. That's my hot take, and I'm sticking to it.
There's a hot take.
Nobody can knock down Hoodie Melo. You ever see those workout videos? Hoodie Melo, when he's wearing that black hoodie, he's unstoppable. I mean, when he's playing 1-on-0, there's no way he's missing. Empty Jim Melo is undefeated.
Guys, if we're going to talk about Carmelo so much, I think it's time that we move on to the other biggest news of the day, which is that Melo's arch nemesis, one Phil Jackson, was just fired in New York. And actually, audience, you may not know this, but the Hoops Inquirer broke that story. We had it first, and that matters. Even if you don't know it. Trey, you kind of have a finger on the pulse of that situation. Can you tell us a little bit about like what you think the Phil ouster means for Melo?
Well, I mean, first of all, let's just to state two real quick points. It's crazy how quickly we forgot about this news just because of the Chris Paul thing. Like, I was for sure this was going to be the biggest news for like the next week or so. And then it totally got tucked under the rug by the Chris Paul trade. And secondly, shout out to the Knicks for firing a 70-year-old man at 3 a.m. on a what was yesterday? Tuesday? On a Tuesday night or Wednesday morning?
Today's Wednesday.
Yeah. So shout out to them. That's interesting. But I think in terms of the Melo situation, I still think that Melo will find a way to. I still think New York wants to get rid of him. I just don't think that it's going to be by any means of a buyout or a stretch provision or anything of that nature. Him getting waived, I don't see Dolan spending money. I'm spending money that he doesn't have to spend. And last I heard, they were dead set on trading him again. The problem with trading is that Melo has to sign off on it, given his no trade clause. But I do think eventually something's going to give, and I don't think Melo. Will be with the organization come opening night. I think what the Knicks are doing, more or less, is kind of trying to clean house in terms of getting rid of the problems. Right, they already fixed the Porzingis problem by shooting two birds with one stone, firing Phil Jackson. And I think that ideally they would like to get rid of Melo, and you know that means that both sides are going to have to come to an agreement on a trade, a destination in particular. But I don't think it's, you know, Phil Jackson getting fired changes the situation with Melo. I think that the Knicks will still try to shop him, and hopefully, you know, they think that they're going to be able to deal him, because they seem to be dead set on not buying him out at the time. Whether he goes to Houston sounds a little weird to me. A lot of the talk out of Melo's camp over the last couple of days is that he'd rather stay close to New York to be close to his family and his son. The two teams that kept coming up were Cleveland and Washington. Cleveland, just because of the fact that he can go chase a ring there with LeBron potentially, and it's not too far. Washington, because it's pretty close to New York City, and his Baltimore roots, of course, him being a DMV guy. But watch out for the Rockets, just for the fact that James Dolan seems to be interested in snagging their big dog in the front office. So I guess we could potentially see, you know, a scenario where Melo could be traded to the Rockets, and he wouldn't be that far from New York City and Toronto. The Rockets.
Yeah, I got confused for a second. I was like, wait.
Yeah. Sorry. So we could see a scenario where he gets traded to the Raptors, just because of the fact that Dolan is interested in bringing in Ujiri. But for the most part, I would think that Cleveland or Washington are the safest bets. The Houston stuff doesn't make sense to me, but as of today, I was told that the Knicks and the Rockets have engaged in trade talks, so that's something to keep an eye on.
I do agree with you. I think that all indicators seem to be that Melo's probably on the move now. You know, whether he goes much further than other Atlantic Division teams is, I think, probably unlikely based on the stuff that's been reported. But Drew, let's play a game, all right? I want you to give me first, like, your ideal Melo destination, like the spiritual Melo destination, the place where Melo, the player, really belongs. And Melo's personality belongs. And two, give me the most likely Melo destination.
I don't like this game. I'm just saying. Actually, I think the two. Yeah, I had never thought about this until about 45 seconds ago when Trey mentioned it. But I actually really like Washington as a destination for Melo. Not as a trade destination, but if, you know, by some miracle he gets bought out and he goes to Washington. You know, first of all, John Wall needs some scoring there. And if you can get him and keep Otto Porter Jr., you could run some small lineups, and that would be, you know, a lot more deadly than what they have now. And because if you replace Marquise Morris with Carmelo Anthony, that's an upgrade in a lot of areas. But if you're Washington, you don't have anything to trade for him. It has to be through buyout. So I would like him there, and as a Celtics fan, that'd be interesting, just because of, you know, all the, because I love the quote unquote rivalries that we have with Washington right now. So having two ultra competitive teams consistently go out in the playoffs is something attractive to me as a fan. Most realistic, I'd say Houston, just because they still have stuff to trade, but I don't like that at all for Houston, because, you know, the more you trade to get this super team that's still going to lose to the Warriors, the more veteran minimum slots you have to sign up to fill up the slots. Like, if you have to give up Eric Gordon and more to get Carmelo Anthony, I don't know if that's worth it, because Eric Gordon is a good piece as a third guard to pair with either Chris Paul or James Harden. I don't know if you want to give that up. But before I move on from Phil Jackson, it's time for our favorite segment of this weekly show, which is Andrew's Analogies. Phil Jackson getting fired in relation to Carmelo Anthony is like when your boss wants to fire you, but then his boss fires your boss. Isn't that crazy? Ha ha, slaps me. All right, that's all I got to say.
No, I don't think it was an analogy. I think it's what happened.
We should cut that out. That was terrible.
My analogy last week was pretty fire. I don't know.
It's a pretty popular segment. We should make that a weekly thing.
I mean, the last one was about, like, if, like, your friend's dog kills your dog, so you kill your dog too. Like, it was poetic.
Yeah, you
was just, like,
very, very dark though.
It was kidnapped, but sure.
That's sick, man. That's it. Drew, the situation you talked about with the Rockets giving up too many pieces to solidify, you know, a three-star core sounds a lot like the situation that Chris Paul is coming from in Los Angeles, which, you know, I think it would be so poetic and, like, so Chris Paul to just, like, switch teams to join up with another star and run into the same exact issue. I do agree with you on the Washington thing, though. I think that Melo is a bit of a spiritual fit with them because they hate the Celtics. I think Melo also hates the Celtics. I think they all get along on that and commiserate. It just makes a lot of sense, you know, basketball reasons.
Melo doesn't get the right to hate the Celtics anymore. He hasn't played us competitively in the last, like, 6 years. It doesn't. I guess since, like, 2013, what, 4 years ago? So that's the last time we ever had anything competitive, because as soon as we got good, the Knicks got bad. And, you know, the last time the Knicks were competent was when we were bad. So there's no reason for Melo to hate us.
Listen, I don't have any stats to back this up, but I'm, like, 99% sure that Melo's been ejected in the third quarter of every game the Knicks played against the Celtics for the past 3 years. I think he does have reason to hate. Trey, what do you think of the potential trade in either one of those two places?
Well, listen, I think something that we didn't take into consideration with the Rockets is Melo and D'Antoni didn't exactly have the greatest divorce here in New York.
Right.
I know Chris Paul has stated his desire to play with Melo. I don't know how James Harden feels about it. I'm sure he'd welcome all the help in the world after all he had to do last year. But it would be something, and it was funny because D'Antoni just finished cracking a joke at the award show about New York, about how he was kind of ousted out of New York. You know, not to say that that was directed at Melo necessarily, but it wasn't the cleanest split between the two. So that's something to take into consideration if Melo actually does find his way to Houston.
For sure. I mean, I think that if that union ends up happening, I think it's going to have a lot more to do with, like you're saying, the CP3 Melo tie than the D'Antoni thing. You know, I mean, one of the benefits there is going to be that Melo is not the big guy on that team, right? So he can't just sell D'Antoni to what's the play to say this, to fuck off.
The kids are listening, Nick.
Yo, I'll censor that. I don't know. It could work better, but listen, enough Melo talk. Like, he's good, but I don't think he's going to move the needle that much anywhere he goes, unfortunately. So I think we should move on now to just, you know, let's talk about free agency in general, besides the two big pieces of news here. The first thing that I think about when I've been thinking about this free agency period is just the fact that the specter of the Warriors, the fact that team exists and is probably going to be dominating the league for at least the next 3 or 4 years, has to be in the minds of players and their agents, and even in the minds of teams who are out there considering whether to throw money at guys. Drew, how big do you think the Warriors factor will be in the moves that we see in these first 2 weeks, the most sexy time of free agency?
I think it's a big factor because as a team, you have to examine your assets and you have to examine your players and you have to make a decision. Either you're the Clippers or you're the Rockets, right? If you're the Rockets, you're trying to build a super team to maybe dethrone the Warriors, which, you know, I don't think that's a worthwhile gamble. To give up future assets like they did, or you're the Clippers, or you blow it up and, you know, you do. Well, we don't know what the Clippers are going to do depending on Blake Griffin, but, you know, there's a very clear distinction between the two types of moves teams are going to make. A team is either going to put all their eggs in the rebuilding basket just to be ready for when the Warriors are done with their reign of terror, or they're going to try to build a super team to compete with the Warriors. I don't think we're going to see a lot of teams make, you know, like when the Pacers signed Monte Ellis and Al Jefferson to be a competitive team, or what the Hawks do every year. I don't think we're going to see a lot of those moves. I think, you know, teams are going to clearly pick a direction this offseason. And that's why I appreciate Boston, because we could do both. And that's a cool thing. We can have assets for the future, and we can still go all in to get a Gordon Hayward, even a Paul George, and still have some assets left over. But yeah, I think a lot of teams are going to have to pick a direction. Whereas, you know, in the past, teams could kind of get away with you know, we'll just get through this off season and retool a little bit. But it's either you're all in bringing multiple All-Stars, or, you know, you're kind of fading back.
Clay, what do you think about the Warriors factor? Do you think, like Drew does, that in essence is going to be kind of a thing that puts everything into relief for teams, that people are going to have to pick a side? Or do you think we're still going to see teams like, say, the Grizzlies that are pretty much angling to be, like, you know, a high 40, low 50 win team and just make it like a round maybe?
Well, I think that there's never been a better time to be a rebuilding team. You know, I think the Warriors obviously have all the tools to be a dynasty for the next couple of years, but only they can only last for so long. And I think that because of that, let's be honest. Right now, the Warriors are the favorites. They're probably going to be the favorites next year, probably the year after that. And for as long as they keep this core and they stay healthy, I don't think that realistically too many teams have a chance of pulling out any sort of upset. Even the Cavaliers, to say the way that they're built right now, that they could possibly shock the Warriors would be somewhat of a stretch. So I think that any organization that's smart enough should be doing its best to prepare for the future rather than going all in to try to win now. So in that sense, I do agree that some teams, you know, will go that route. But I do think it's silly for a couple of teams to, try to push the agenda, you know, just to maybe come in second place or whatever it may be. If you can do both the way that, you know, Boston can, as Drew said, by all means do so, right? You're instilling great culture while still preparing for the future, as opposed to what we've seen out of some teams where they're just tanking. But I think more or less this is a fantastic period to focusing on the future, right? Again, it's probably going to be the Warriors. And if that's the case, I don't see why try to go all in and you know, give up assets and things of that nature just to come in second place. Or if you're you know, in the East, come in third place. Or if you're in the West, coming in third place, excuse me. That's what I think is going to happen. Are some teams that have unrealistic, you know, goals of trying to win definitely going to be reacting to the Warriors' existence? Absolutely. I think that's what the Rockets essentially are doing. But it's, you know, it's funny because lost in all that is what the Spurs could have potentially done, right? Like, we'll never know what the Spurs might have done with, you know, a healthy Kawhi Leonard. And hindsight is 2020, of course. And, you know, maybe now we say, oh, they still didn't have a chance. But I do think that's an interesting dynamic. You know, we don't really know what could have came out of that. And the Spurs are obviously have been one of the better teams in the West. They have some work to do. Obviously, they're trying to unload Aldridge. Tony Parker is becoming a corpse, or a traffic cone more than anything, if we're being honest. But it's interesting that we won't know what they'll be able to do. They're one of the teams like the Celtics that can kind of do both. They can still draft and develop the youth. Obviously, if they keep a guy like Jonathan Simmons while still competing. But I think more or less teams should be, I'm not saying that they will, but they should be not paying too much mind to the next 2 or 3 years and really be aiming for being competitive in 2 or 3 years rather than, you know, this upcoming season or the season after.
You know, the team that keeps on coming up, probably because, like you guys are saying, they're maybe in a position to put together something that could make a run at the Warriors for a couple of games, is the Boston Celtics. And I think it's important to talk about them because they're probably the most interesting team in this free agency and in the offseason in general. You know, Adrian Wojnarowski of currently the Vertical and soon on July 4th at midnight ESPN reported that they're working on a path to get Gordon Hayward off the free agent market and trade for Paul George. Drew, I'm sure you have many things to say about this, so I'm going to start you off with just an opening question. Do you think that it's realistic that the Celtics will be able to get Gordon Hayward and Paul George and maintain enough of a bench and enough of
from the range of their starting unit that they'll be able to compete for the Eastern Conference Finals and ultimately in the finals against the Warriors.
I actually have nothing to say about the Celtics. Next question, please.
Oh, it's over? Okay, yeah. Celtics.
No, I'm just saying. Okay, no. Okay, let me start by saying this. It's entirely realistic for the Celtics to sign Gordon Hayward and trade for Paul George. There's no problem with that. All it takes is moving Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley and Terry Rozier. And then you have that team going into next season, along with some veteran minimums and all that stuff. The problem, and is this is where it gets complicated, is keeping that team together, right? You have a big four, Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford, Gordon Hayward, and Paul George. Those are all guys that are going to be making 20-plus mil next offseason, right? So in 2018, Isaiah Thomas is going to be he'll be in line to sign a 5-year, $200 million contract from Boston as an extension. And Paul George is going to want his extension or re-sign with the team unless he leaves for L.A. And then Al Horford is already making 25 mil, and then Gordon Hayward is going to be making 30 mil. So when you have to pay for all that, right? And the salary cap is going to be projected to be around 100-something million. Just those four players alone reaches the salary cap, and then you're just left with exceptions and, over the cap exceptions like the mid-level exception and veteran minimum signings, and that's a terrible. I mean, if your top four is good, then you can get away with it, kind of like the Warriors. But even the Warriors, they have Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston as strong bench pieces, right? But to keep that team together with the big four, you'd have to get rid of guys like Marcus Smart, and even they wouldn't even be able to afford their number one pick next season. They'd have to get rid of either Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. So there are a couple of options you can go with here. First one is something that a lot of Celtics fans are probably not going to agree with, but personally, that's my preference, is to just let Isaiah Thomas walk. Because I love Isaiah Thomas. I love everything he's done for the team. I think he's been extremely helpful with building a culture here and making it attractive. But who wants to pay a 5'9 point guard $200 million over five seasons to pay him well into his 30s when his game is predicated on athleticism? Now, of course, I could be wrong, and he could be a really productive player at 35, 36, 37 years old, but theoretically, it's not something that, teams are jumping at, right? And that's kind of a joke that goes around Twitter, is like, who wants to pay for Isaiah Thomas next year? and not many people are jumping at the idea. Now, Isaiah is a phenomenal player. You don't accidentally average 30 points a game, right? He's earned all the accolades, including all second team All-NBA. But that's just one option, right? Another option is that, you keep those four guys at a ridiculous salary, and then you have no bench, which is, not ideal. You have to get rid of Marcus Smart. You have to get, obviously, Terry Rozier wouldn't be back still. You'd have no options at point guard. You probably have to get rid of one of Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, which is not ideal either, because you probably have to give them away for nothing. And you have to fill your bench with a bunch of vet mins, a veteran minimum contract's not ideal. A third option would be trading Al Horford. But who's going to trade for Al Horford for, 28 mil when he's going to be into his? And then a fourth option would be to let Paul George walk, which is also not ideal because we're giving up assets to get him in the first place. So that's a real big issue. But there's so many permutations that can come from, the situation of having those four guys on the team. Isaiah Thomas could take a pick. I mean, he shouldn't. Because he's an all-star making $6 million a year, and his contract goes down by year. His highest salary came in the first season that he signed his contract. So I wouldn't say it's fair to ask him to take a pay cut. But you could ask Paul George to take a pay cut, and that's kind of fair considering that he's the one that wants to play for a winning team, but I don't know. But there's so many things that, maybe one of them does take a pay cut, or maybe Marcus Smart takes a pay cut, which also wouldn't make sense because he's a young guy, who still has a lot of time to make a lot of money in this league, even through his 28% shooting from three. But he's definitely worth his contract. He's definitely a $20 million kind of guy. I will stand for him every day of the week and twice on Sunday. But the problem is keeping that team. And it doesn't line up with everything we know about Danny Ainge to build sustainability, because
Danny Ainge has never been the kind of guy to overreact for something that might not work. When he put all of his eggs in the Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen basket, we knew that that was a contender. They were the de facto best team in the league that year. And even if you had the Lakers ranked higher, like, it was clearly the two of them. And it's a toss-up in a series between the two. And the Celtics won in 2008. They would have gone back in 2009 if KD had been healthy, and they would have won in 2010 if Kendrick Perkins hadn't tore his shoulder. And I'm sticking to that story. But Danny Ainge, even though he's a gambler, he's not going to throw everything into a Big Four team with no way of getting better or no future sustainability. So I don't think it's I don't know. I really don't know if they're really going to go for that Big Four idea. But if they do, I mean, they're all smarter than me, so I'm sure that there's a way to – I know that Danny Ainge isn't going to do anything to compromise future flexibility. So we'll see what happens.
I generally agree with you, Drew. I think, if we're being honest, the Celtics got unlucky. They, you know, they're poorly built for the time that we're in, and – Nobody could really foresaw Kevin Durant going to the Warriors. But if we're in a league where the Warriors are the top dog, as they are, and you're trying to build a team to beat them, I think they got a bit unlucky. I agree 100% with, you know, what you said on Isaiah Thomas, and smaller guards typically age much worse than bigger guards. I at the end of the day, if you do give him that big contract, you are overpaying for an undersized guard who's a bit on the old side by the end of that deal. And then Al Horford is whether you want to say it was a bad contract or not, he's going to be eating up a lot of cap space with his contract. And he's not necessarily – listen, if you have Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford – let's assume you get Hayward and Paul George, excuse me. By all technicalities, you have a Big Four, but Al Horford is barely good enough to qualify to be put in a quote unquote Big Four, and he's taking up just as much money as any of the other three guys there potentially. I don't think they're built, you know, to. I don't think they're built well for the time that we're in. I don't. I think in an ideal world, you do let IT walk. I think, you know, you kind of have to deal with the Horford contract as it is. And I'm not sure if the one-year gamble for Paul George, if you don't know, he's gonna re-sign for sure. I don't know if the one-year gamble is worth it if you can end up losing, future assets that may come in handy by the time that the Warriors actually start slowing down. So I think that they got unlucky. If you would have told me this, and we'd be in an NBA where Durant is still on, you know, the Thunder or wherever it may be, and it's not a crazy super team, you know, the way that the Warriors are currently constructed, Boston is in a very solid position to become the best team in the NBA. But the way that it is, they currently stand, as you mentioned, with all the financial problems that they would run into down the line. You know, and we're talking about doing stuff maybe for a shot at winning the championship for a year or two down the line. I think it's too bad of a series of moves, and they kind of just have to deal with this and just hope that their young core is still good enough in a couple of years, like I said, about what teams should be doing. And that's kind of just playing a waiting game, letting the Warriors cool down, maybe fall apart, whatever it may be. Focusing on the future right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's why I think this is an unpopular opinion in Celtics Twitter right now, but I really think that you got to go either or with Paul George and Gordon Hayward. I'd have no problem if you just get Gordon Hayward and move on with that. And I have no problem with just Paul George and you move on with that. You just trade for Paul George and that's it. Because when you do that, you continue to have flexibility to, like I said in the last podcast, let's say one of those guys in Golden State gets injured or LeBron gets injured, then you have one of those guys. Because this Celtics team already made the Eastern Conference Finals, and they lost in five, but you know they stole a game from the Cavs without Isaiah Thomas. So you add Isaiah Thomas, you add Gordon Hayward to that team, you add Jason Tatum, a stronger bench, Anthony Davis. You know, that's a better team. So, you know, they have a chance if something wild happens to one of those two super teams. And I think that's interesting that and when you add just one of those guys, either Gordon Hayward or either Paul George, you have the sustainability too. You can sign one of those guys to a long contract, and then you can you know, keep going with that team for several years. And then even when Horford's contract runs out, Isaiah Thomas' contract runs out, and Gordon Hayward's contract runs out, you still have Marcus Smart signed to a long-term deal because you don't have to give him up because there won't be both of those guys. And you still have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown will just be hitting his next contract. So you'll be in a good position if you just commit to one of those guys, either Gordon Hayward or either Paul George. I'm really not a big fan of both because I don't think it's worth – I don't think their ability to win a championship is worth mortgaging the entire future just for maybe 1 year. Because at the same time, listen, we're talking about Paul, you know, Kevin Durant getting injured or LeBron James getting injured, but what if Al Horford gets injured in this one-year window that we have? What if Isaiah Thomas's hip never heals properly in this mm-hmm. one-year window that we have? So I don't think it's worth it to really force everything for 2018 to try to get that 2018 championship and then have to absorb this ridiculously large luxury tax bill. I'm reading somewhere that just the luxury tax bill could be $74 million. Which is almost an entire salary cap in itself. You know, that's to me, that's ridiculous just for 1 year of actual competitiveness and then a couple of years later with no bench and being one of those teams. You know, it doesn't make sense. But if you just add one, if you just have Gordon Hayward, then I think that you're in a really great position if you're Boston for not only next year for 2018, but also moving forward because you get to keep that flexibility and you get to keep the development going with your young guys.
Well, real quick, just to go back to Paul George, rentals are, if you're going to get a guy for a one-year rental, it has to be a desperation move, right? I don't think that Boston is in a position where they should be desperate for anything necessarily. I think that in that sense, it makes it would be a much more logical move for Cleveland to pursue Paul George if Cleveland actually thinks that they might actually lose LeBron next year.
Right.
You know, whether there's any truth to that, you know, I don't know. But if that's what they think, then I understand that. But rentals, for the most part, should be somewhat of a desperation, last minute, let's give this one last shot type of thing. That's not the way that Boston is currently constructed. And then in regards to Gordon Hayward, I think that people are – listen, if you can choose one of the two and you're guaranteed to stay with them, it's Paul George. It's not Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward is a fantastic player. He's very solid. But I think people are a little high on Gordon Hayward, a little higher than they should be. I think he's a tiny bit overrated in my opinion. You know, we're just talking about Melo, right? We all know where Melo is at this point. I'm not sure how much better Gordon Hayward is than Carmelo Anthony. Overall, you know, on certain things, you know, defensively, absolutely. But I'm not sure, you know, and Gordon Hayward gets thrown around. His name gets thrown around in this sense like he's a franchise, but he's not a franchise player. He's an outstanding piece. He might be an outstanding star next to another star, but he's not a franchise player.
He's better than Jay Crowder. That's why we want him so bad.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in that sense, it's definitely an upgrade. But then to go to the point of going for both of them, you know, even though Paul George is for sure the better one, so on and so forth, it's kind of redundant in my opinion. They're, for the most part, kind of the same player in a lot of ways. Paul George might be more versatile defensively, but you're essentially getting two guys that do the exact same thing. Paul George may do them a little bit better, in my opinion. But I don't know, man. If you're going to end up giving up that much, I don't know why you go for two guys that are so goddamn similar. Especially given the point that you made.
I can see why. I can see why, though, because, you know, if you look at how to beat Golden State, I think that the Celtics are banking on that the solution is having a bunch of versatile 6'9", 6'8", wings, and you throw them at Golden State to defend with versatility, and then with Gordon Hayward and Paul George, you still keep your scoring. You could conceivably run a super small lineup to have Paul George guard, you know, Golden State's best lineup. You could guard Draymond Green. You could still match up well and have a really versatile defensive lineup. And you have a bunch of guys who are similarly sized that you can switch all the pick and rolls. You can switch on everything. I think that's the thinking behind it. Now, do I necessarily agree? Kind of, but
you know, at the same time, I kind of like the idea of developing Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to be functioning in the same role and not having to pay those guys, you know, $30 million a year.
Okay, so let's say, for argument's sake, that the Celtics do end up with both George and Hayward next offseason. The question I want to pose to you guys is, do you think that they then, the Celtics, become a ring chaser destination? Because there's a pretty interesting crop of guys who are unrestricted free agents this offseason who are, you know, the classic ring chasers, right? Older, towards the end of their careers, still kind of productive, and the majority without a ring. You know, guys like, for example, Aaron Aflalo, Vince Carter is probably the biggest one, right? Randy Foy, Tony Allen, who of course has a ring with the Celtics, but, you know, is an older, unrestricted free agent. Luis Scola, I mean, Zach Randolph, there's just a lot of them, right? So do you guys think that we'll see some of those guys gravitate towards the Celtics, thinking that maybe the Cavs are too shaky and, you know, Golden State only having 15 roster spots? Drew, what do you think?
I don't think Boston becomes a ring-chasing destination. For one reason is that a lot of those names that are guys who are going to potentially be in that kind of market are a bunch of guards. And Boston has a litany of guards that they can look to that are cheaper, younger options. I think Boston has a bunch of second-rounders that they really like. I think they like all of their second-rounders this year, a couple from years past, that they might look to instead of trying to get aging stars. They might look in the front court for some help. You know, maybe an N.A. or Zach Randolph, but definitely not Luis Scola. I don't want Luis Scola on my team, but that's just a personal opinion. But I don't think that they're going to really be a hotspot destination, because at the same time, as a free agent, are you really going to bet against LeBron James being your best bet at a ring? I don't think so, because most of the guys in the league have a really high – I mean, everyone has a really high opinion of LeBron James. So if you're looking as a veteran, like, okay, I'm taking a vet minimum contract. It could be with the Celtics, who are, you know, kind of good. I don't know how the team is going to look on, you know, on the court. It looks good on paper. And on the other hand, you have LeBron James. I'm sure the teams will still go with them. And then, of course, the Warriors. who doesn't want to play for the Warriors right now if they want to ring? So I don't think Boston is really going to vault to the top of that list.
Trey, what do you think?
You know, I wholeheartedly agree with Andrew. I think that ultimately it'll be the Warriors and the Cavs. The Warriors, just because of obviously how good they've shown that they can be. And just with Cleveland, wherever LeBron is, I think that'll always, at least for while LeBron is still the man, that'll always be a destination for those sort of guys. He obviously has a reputation. We saw it in Miami, and even now in Cleveland with older guys. So I think more than anything, players are attracted to particular guys. I don't think Boston has one player like that that's going to bring in older talent. So I agree with Drew. For the most part, it'll be the Warriors if they have the space in Cleveland. LeBron seems to be able to just snag up whoever it is he wants every year.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you guys. I mean, they might get some of, you know, the ones who are left off of those Cavs and Warriors rosters, but I don't think they'll be, you know, a number one, even necessarily a number two option. All right, so we spent approximately 7 hours on the Celtics, which is, of course, appropriate. That's what we do here. And I think it's time to get to a fun part, the last part of today's podcast, which is our Twitter mailbag. Now, we had a real robust response. We got a grand total of, I think, two responses to our HoopSync main Twitter page request for questions. So, folks, do better.
Do better,
next
guys.
Week.
Do better.
Do better.
Question,
do better.
Right?
We have the wackiest listeners. So, the first question is from Babar or Babar. I'm going to go with Babar. Babar of Twitter, who asks, is there any realistic Melo deal that doesn't end with the Knicks getting 25 to 50 cents on the dollar in return for Melo? Trey, I'll let you go first.
I don't think so. I think, listen, part of Phil's biggest error in the deal that he gave Carmelo is that Carmelo has total power over this. Carmelo's going to dictate this, and this is going to happen however it is that he wants it to happen. they'll get really lucky if they get a fair return for Melo, in my opinion. But to answer the question, no, I don't think so. And at the end of the day, you can go back and blame Phil for this.
Drew, what do you think?
So angry, Trey. I can feel the animosity. Oh, jeez. Tell us how you really feel. I think I agree with Trey. And you know, the thing is, Carmelo Anthony wants to stay in New York. Like, he's not really pressed to leave. So if there's no trade that he likes, he's not gonna force one. So I think that whatever. And also, I don't think that Melo really wants to gut any team that he goes to by trade. So I think either he plays it out or the Knicks are going to get robbed. And again, like Trey said, that's because of Phil Jackson. How's it going?
It's going. Listen, never underestimate Melo's willingness to gut a team he's going to. He did that real well with the Question number two in the mailbag. Thanks for that one, Bavar. Question number two is from Nick Martinez on Twitter. He asks, where can we get...
I need you to be honest with me on air. Was that you?
Listen,
Nick Martinez
guys,
is a very popular name, is it? Was it?
I know, but I want to know if that... Because I don't know. I've heard from sources that Nick Martinez has 5 Twitter accounts. So I need to know on the spot right now on
really?
Air, was that you who submitted that question?
Yeah, so the word that I'm hearing just from around... that he has 4 and not 5 Twitter accounts, so the reports of the quantity of his Twitter accounts have been greatly exaggerated. I can't say if it was me or not, but I can definitely say that it wasn't not me, you know what I mean? Like, listen,
I have no idea
what you mean. Forget it. I'll put it out there. Guys, I have another Twitter account. I have 3 other Twitter accounts, but I have one you should know about. It is at Mufasa the God on Twitter. Mufasa, like from The Lion King, the THA God, G-O-D. That's where I tweet all of my thoughts about such varied topics as, like, hot sauce, music, Romeo Santos, Drake.
Nick, why are you like this? Who raised you?
What do you want to...
Why are you
the
way you are?
Listen, you're asking who raised him, and you don't even know the details of... all the hot sauce stuff. Why don't you? What was the last thing you ate with hot sauce, Nick?
So I had pasta for dinner and I dumped a quarter of a bottle of Fisher's pizza.
Calling it now. We should call this podcast "Hot Sauce and Hot Takes."
Yo, I thought of I have this concept for a blog, right? That I'm gonna start once I make my millions off Hoops Inquiry. Basically, the concept is that I just blog about reviewing different kinds of hot sauce. I guess it's not really a concept.
Wow.
It's just I would just take pictures of different bottles of hot sauce and kind of give you my take on it. So I'd be hot takes. You know what I mean? And
wow.
These are the things that you think about, Nick. Again, I ask, why are you like this?
These are the only things I think about. I mean, look.
Anyway,
so
Nick Martinez's question.
Okay, so Nick Martinez on Twitter, I will pass to God, follow him, asks, in essence, where can we get peak Dion Waiters at his peak Dion Waiters-ness? What is the location? I assume
you're asking. Please let me answer this. Please let me answer this.
I need to answer
it.
This, Trey.
No, check on this.
All right, go for it.
Listen, I need Dion Waiters in China averaging 85 a game over Jimmer Fredette. I'm dead serious. I need him in China just going all out.
You ain't even going to be watching the games.
Hey, but listen, he'd enjoy it. What's his name? Stephon Marbury's God in China, bro.
That's
Dion
true.
Waiters,
that's so
Dion
true.
Dion Waiters to take over the country.
Remember when in the lockout year when J.R. Smith was over there, bro?
Oh yeah. Of course. So
here's
China,
what I
think.
I would miss out on watching Dion Waiters if he went to China because there's no way I'm tuning into live stream. So I need him in New York because. That's where that really all the drama, he get all the minutes. I mean, Courtney Lee's a good player, but he's not entertaining, right? You start Deion Waiters. You get the New York media on him. You get him dropping 30 every once a week. You get all the poses, the weird media quotes in New York with the New York media. It doesn't get better than that, bro.
But hang on, I'm going blank. We've never had Deion and J.R. Smith on the same team, right?
Oh my, he's going to the Cavs, confirmed.
Dude, I mean, between the bench celebrations and all the stupid pointless shots that shouldn't go in but somehow go in, that's what we really need.
Bro.
That's what we.
Oh, you know, no. You know what we need? We need Deion Waiters and Golden State. We need a J.R. Smith Deion Waiters rivalry.
Yeah. I like that. That sounds a lot better.
You have these wild bench reactions on both sides, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy shots. Mm.
Listen, I think that you're both wrong, or only half right, in the sense that, like, we don't need the rivalry. We need them both in New York. Like, we need, like, JR back in the Knicks, and we need Deion on the Knicks with him.
The world would explode.
We could have, like, an all-goon, all-stars team in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, we
got to
get
Kenyon, like,
Martin out of retirement.
The whole thing. The whole thing.
Kenyon Martin and Chris Anderson, Birdman, all four of them on the same team.
I think you should Matt Barnes out there too. Make Derek Fisher the new color commentator. Relieve Clyde Frazier of his duties.
Dude,
you
listen,
have...
you know what would be so dope? If Mark Jackson ends up getting a job somewhere and Derek Fisher goes into commentating, and we forge Derek Fisher to be the guy who does all the Warriors games. You know how Mark Jackson somehow miraculously gets put on every Warriors broadcast? Just have Derek Fisher there with Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy on every Warriors broadcast, and let's just hope that Matt Barnes gets more minutes, because that would be quality TV.
Oh, definitely.
I think that wherever Deion ends up, he'll be paid handsomely, because he was kind of very good last season, and I can only hope that
he was the best
somewhere.
Player in the NBA. He was playing at an all-time level, to be honest.
Definitely. You know what, guys? I think that Drew's last year. We had him in the pod. I think that's gonna be it.
Hot sauce and hot pigs.
Hot sauce and hot pigs. No, actually, guys, we have run a bit over. As much as I'd love to sit here and talk Deion later and the Celtics with you for the next 4 hours. But we must be kind to our listeners. So that's going to do it for us this week. The takes have been taken. They've been hot, some hotter than others. We talked Celtics. We talked free agency. We talked Celtics and Celtics again. And we're probably going to do it again next week. So, guys,
and we talked
about
Carmelo Anthony with the hoodie.
One more time. Why don't you give the people where they can find you and what you're working on. Trey, why don't you start?
You guys can follow me on Twitter at Trey Rodriguez NY. Trey Rodriguez NY. Obviously, follow us. Follow all of our work on the Hoops Inquirer website, hoopsinquirer.com, and follow the big account at Hoops Inc. That's INQ, not INC. We will be a lot more active during the off season as the off season continues to prove to be better than the playoffs.
Drew.
You can find me at Paradoxia11 on Twitter. That's PARADOXY11. And you can follow my work on Hoops Inc. I'll be getting some Celtics coverage when Gordon Hayward signs with us. You'll see my stuff. Also, on my personal Twitter, you can listen to my 5 to 20 minute podcast on Bumpers. Subscribe to me on Bumpers. And Marcus Smart is definitely the best player in the NBA.
And you can find me at Nick Martinez NY on Twitter, or at one of my 3 other accounts, which I'm not going to give you the name to. But if somebody can find them, I will mail you $5 in an envelope. If you can find all 3 of them, $5 for me to you, $5.
Like $5, or like a $5 coupon, or like a $5 Visa card, or like what are we talking here?
I'm gonna hit you with $5 cash plus like 6 or 7 box tops from the cereal boxes.
This is the best day of my life.
Find them. There you go. It's on. All right, that's gonna be it for us this week, guys. We'll see you next week, hopefully, with Will Smith. All right, bye.